this point, according to Lori Andrus, her husband saw this from the top of the stairs, became enraged, rushed down the stairs. The police claim he had a baseball bat in his hand. Lori Andrus said she saw no baseball bat. She claimed there was no room to swing a bat on the very narrow confines of the house. The police claim that he struck at least twice with a baseball bat, hitting the fingers of Officer Gerazio, and I guess hitting Officer Zamenik across the chest, and also, I think, hitting Sergeant Hennig. And they claim they then shot him in self-defense as he was outside, again attacking the officers. I may have the specifics about Hennig and Zamenik wrong. I heard that Zamenik was hit, and the stories are confusing because the police are not releasing the police reports, and this is a significant part of this puzzle. And what then happened was, according to the police, they shot at him, and, you know, then they, that was that, and he went down. Well, according to the woman across the street, Sheree Peterson, her husband, Rick Peterson, who arrived shortly thereafter, their son, R.J. Peterson, some of the younger boys who are actually watching this as it happened, what happened was, and this is a composite of what they said, and we've actually played their specific comments over this station earlier, and we have a loop tape, the fabled loop tape, which we can never quite get together for you to hear, but it is available for folks who are interested. And for those who are interested, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is the number for Santa Cruzans for Full Disclosure and the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom if you want to hear this tape. Or you can keep your radio tuned to 96.3 FM, free radio, which is what you're listening to now, and it'll probably be coming up there as well. In any case, the witnesses who saw this had a different view than the police. And the boys who saw it, and the mom of the children, and the dad of R.J. Peterson, made some serious allegations. They said that they saw him with a bat, but he was not within striking range of any of the officers when he was shot. And they claim they did not see him approaching the officers in a threatening way. And they claim that they never actually saw him strike an officer, though there is disagreement as to how long they were watching, at least some of them. They claim that he was, one shot brought him down, and then police fired more bullets into him. They actually fired 8 to 10 shots total. And there is no dispute on the fact that there was children kind of surrounding the area. There were many children in the area, I think at least 4 or 5. It was an apartment area. There was claims that no warning was given before he was shot, that these were fully grown male police officers who had pepper spray or mace, batons, they'd put on their gloves, and they were kind of, according to Sheree Peterson, pumping themselves up before they came in. And then they claim, the witnesses, particularly the Petersons, claim that there was no medical attention given to this man who lay essentially bleeding to death on the ground. When neighbors tried to intervene to give him some medical attention, the officers forced them back. When neighbors tried to intervene to help the wife or the child, neighbors forced them back. When the mother and the child went in the house, the officers forced their way into the house by going to the landlady and making her, instructing her to open the door. And then they forced Lori Peterson to go to the police station, held her for hours without giving her access to an attorney. And then they also treated Brian Andrus, they being authorities, eventually at the hospital in a really disgraceful fashion. You're going to hear some testimony about this now as we turn to the police review board meeting of April 13th. Now, once a month, and it's the second Monday of every month at City Hall, the police review board meets. This is 7 individuals who are appointed, one by each city council member, supposedly to, as I said, look over the police reports. And at least that's how they see their role. We had hoped that they would conceive of their role as curbing police misconduct by taking whatever steps they feel they need to take and using the tools they have to really investigate fully, particularly serious crimes like the shooting of Happy John Dine and this particular shooting, the shooting of Brian Andrus. Instead, what has happened is that this has become a kind of opportunity for posturing, whereby the Citizens Police Review Board somehow reassures some of the liberals in the community that something is happening when nothing is. And at the same time, there's sort of a shadow conflict with the conservatives who rage that this police review board is crippling the police force. If you look at the DiCenzo cartoon for this week, for instance, in the Metro Santa Cruz, you'll see DiCenzo mocking the police review board as insisting that officers approach with just their fingers sticking out, trying to tickle the armed gunman to death. In fact, this is a complete distortion of what's really going on. The Police Review Board is actually in the pockets of the police department, and they speak with great respect to the police department. They virtually never criticize the police department. They're very sensitive to criticism by the police department, and anybody who's taken forthright positions about police misconduct have found themselves forced off the board or just decided that they just couldn't do anything with the board at all. That's been the actual, real history, and you can actually read about that in the Scan Santa Cruz Action Network newsletter that came out this fall. And I had an interesting call from former Police Review Board member John Malkin, who he and I sometimes take different positions on issues. I think he may regard me as more radical than he, perhaps not, but he tends to confirm the position that I took on this issue, which is that what's going on here with this whole situation is a shadow battle. I mean, the Police Review Board supposedly convened, and the big brouhaha was, well, here are two complaints about the Button Street shooting. Marilyn and Doug McGrath have turned in complaints about excessive force, and the police chief has said, I won't even look at them. And the Police Review Board is standing up for the citizenry by saying, wait, you can't do that. Well, what is actually going on? Well, what's going on is that the police chief, for some strange reason, is not following the usual procedure of sending the complaints into his internal affairs department, letting them make the rounds, sending them to the Police Review Board months later, and the Police Review Board then gives them the rubber stamp of okay, which is what has happened in 99% of these complaints, pretty much. I mean, it's 90%, let's say. And that's the usual process. Nobody's unhappy. The Police Review Board can say, see, we looked at everything. Everything's fine, even though, of course, all they did was peer over the shoulders of the police department's investigators. They didn't take any independent investigation. They didn't, hire anybody to look at what was really going on. They took the word of the DA investigators who looked at interviewed the officers. But for this time, for some peculiar reason, the police chief said, I'm not even going to look at these complaints. We're not even going to send them to the internal affairs process. And we're not even going to tell the Police Review Board that we're not looking at the complaints. The Police Review Board learned about all this from the Sentinel. They didn't get any word from the chief that he was dumping these two complaints, the only complaints that the police department received about the Button Street shooting. What was going on here? Well, the head of the board, or the former head of the Police Review Board, the Citizens Police Review Board, Bill Christie, conservative appointee of Mary Beth Campbell, said, gosh, this doesn't sound right. We should be able to look at those complaints or at least know that they exist before they get thrown away. That's not the right thing to do. And so that became a topic of some discussion. Now, why do I call this a shadow battle? Well, because what Christie wanted to do was not have a real investigation into those complaints. He just wanted to make sure that before those complaints hit the trash can, they would go through his office, that he would kind of be a part of the trash squad, so to speak, as he has been in the past. He couldn't understand why, they didn't proceed with the normal process. I have some suggestions about why they didn't proceed. You're going to hear me talking about that. And I'll tell you, to cut to the chase and avoid any suspense, I'll tell you now why I think those complaints were sent back. I don't know, and I have no real sure proof or clear evidence, but I note a very interesting coincidence that the complaints were filed within a week, maybe a week and a half after the shooting, very soon after the shooting. And very soon after the shooting, the victim, I call him the victim. I guess the police would call him the suspect. He was. What is he suspected of? Not of hurting his wife. What? Double parking on the curb. I guess assault. Attacking with a baseball bat when officers came into his house and grabbed his wife. You've got to be more respectful of those British soldiers. I'm sorry, those U.S. Those American police officers. Of course, I intentionally slipped because our country was founded on resistance to British oppression and that very specific thing, which is violating the sanctity of the home. So, what happened here was the police chief, for some reason, decided to dump the complaints. And at the same time this was happening, The district attorney's office was being asked by Brian Andrus's lawyer, John Thornton, we want to see the police reports. We want to see the interrogations that were made of these four officers afterward. Well, the DA's office stonewalled. The police department and the DA's office did not release these reports to the defense. Week after week. They were only released about a month later, 2 weeks after the McGrath complaints had hit the police department. Now, what's important here? Well, when a complaint hits the police department, it goes to the Internal Affairs is supposed to look over the police reports. Well, let me point this out. What if the police reports are still in flux? That is to say, what if the same police reports that for some reason the defense counsel cannot get a hold of for love or money, cannot be found, are not being given to the defense counsel in spite of orders from the judge twice, in spite of four hearings, I guess on the fourth hearing they got them, might not this indicate that they are being fiddled with? Again, we're speculating. I have no proof that there was any kind of fiddling being done. But it seems like such a strange thing for the police chief to do, not to send those complaints into the Internal Affairs Department, as he has done with virtue with many other complaints. It certainly can't be dismissed as a minor complaint. It's a very serious complaint, excessive or almost lethal force. It's not a trivial complaint, and certainly going to be brought up again by the papers. Well, what he said was, of course, his excuse was, well, the complaints were not sufficiently specific. They didn't name officers and they didn't name policies, specific policies. Well, as you're going to hear in this police review board hearing, there was no, that particular allegation was completely bogus. They circled the policies. The police chief knew exactly who they were talking about. There was no real ambiguity at all. So what the police chief said couldn't possibly be a real reason for his refusing to look at those complaints. It was a cover. And the only thing I can think of, and I have limited resources, I don't live in the police department, I don't have access to all those sources, is those police reports were just not available for some strange reason, because certainly they were not being given to the defense counsel at that time. They weren't being given to Brian Andrus's lawyer, even though he repeatedly requested them and the judge ordered it twice. So this is, I suppose I'm going to be called a conspiracy theorist because of this, and this is just a question. I raised this question before the police review board, and of course it was quickly ignored. It was dismissed. Nobody mentioned it. It was dropped. But I mention it again here because I think it's a relevant question. I think it is a pertinent question. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play for you some selections from the Citizens Police Review Board meeting on Monday. Now, again, the Citizens Police Review Board does not allow members of the public to witness its deliberations, does not allow members of the public to hear them consider the evidence, and we aren't even talking about a review of the real complaints here. All we're talking about is their once-a-month board where they kind of babble about policy issues. They've been doing this for years, arguing about this rule and that rule, and what rule do we have here, and how can we set up a hearing procedure, but then they never do have any real hearings. They just spend all their time working out abstract formulas for doing all this stuff, but they never do it. They have outreach committees that don't do any outreach. They have complaint forms that essentially don't get out to people to make complaints because everybody has lost any confidence in the Citizens Police Review Board. It's regarded as a joke. Again, a kind of an adjunct to the police department, a kind of a face-saving device of Scott Kennedy's that was passed with minimal power and aren't even using the power that they have. Let me interrupt this to tell you once more, for those of you just tuned in, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, and you're tuned to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. This is a show concerned with civil rights for the poor, civil rights for the community, and we are talking now about the Button Street shooting, the near-fatal bullets fired at Brian Andrus, who is still in a wheelchair, as far as I know. He's been bailed out of the jail so that he's at least back with his family, and he's under multiple felony charges of assaulting officers Not walking down the street with a baseball bat going after officers, but I would suppose in his own mind, and according to his wife, defending his home from police officers who broke in. Serious situation. Well, so this is the Citizens Police Review Board hearing. It happens every second Monday of every month, so it happens once a month on the second Monday. And usually, I've been avoiding these meetings. I've actually gone to a couple because of the serious cases that have come up, but generally, I kind of made up my mind that going to these meetings was pointless unless you had a significant number of people with you to literally force the board to pay some attention to what was being said. Unlike city council meetings, which happen twice a month on every second and fourth Tuesday, hearings are not televised. They are recorded, and if you want to hear the tapes of the Citizens Police Review Board, the audio tapes, they aren't put on television, you can go to the library, the public library, and you can hear them there, or you can actually go to the offices of the Citizens Police Review Board, which are right around the corner from the library at 915 Cedar Street, and you can hear them during their hours from 9 to 1, Monday through Thursday. So, a number of us had gotten together at the invitation of the Button Street Neighbors Organization. The Petersons were concerned about this. I mentioned they were the neighbors across the street who witnessed what they felt was misconduct by the police. They wanted to do something about it, and there were some other neighbors also concerned. They actually called Mayor Celia Scott. They told the mayor what they'd seen, that they hadn't seen Brian given any medical treatment. They hadn't seen him strike anybody with a bat. They hadn't seen him menace anybody with a bat. They hadn't seen him within range of anybody with a bat. They had a number of concerns that they had brought to the mayor's attention and that they wanted to bring formally to the attention of the community. And they were going to do this through the Citizens Police Review Board. My advice to them was, sure, go ahead, but, you know, it's not going to do any good in that particular format, but it's probably a good thing to do to say, well, at least we tried to do that. In any case, the Petersons showed up. Cherie Peterson, Rick Peterson, and their son RJ, who was witnessed throughout the entire event, and they spoke. They had a neighbor who spoke, and then Brian Andrus's mother, Linda Andrus, spoke. She was not a witness, but she was a witness to the kinds of treatment Brian received later at the hospital and so forth. And a lot of what's said is very important, very moving. Some of you have heard this before in earlier interviews we had with these folks. But this was the first time they spoke publicly to the community. You should also understand that a number of us have been coming to police review board meetings to get them off the dime on a couple of these issues, to really get them rolling. And in the past, the police review board has given liberal speaking time to people, mostly because nobody shows up. They let you talk, unlike the city council, which will cut you off after 3 minutes, they'll let you talk often for 5 or 10 minutes, or they used to. But when we arrived at this hearing, we were told by the new chair, Lisa Rose, I believe is Catherine Byer's appointee, that we would not be allowed to speak for more than 3 minutes. Well, people have been kind of led to believe, based on the past practices of the board, that they could speak for longer, and they prepared longer statements. So we naturally expressed some concern. I brought this issue to other board members, and I said, look, you can't do this. It seems really kind of unfair, and what's so big on the agenda? These are people who have been traumatized in their community. They're concerned about the kids and they being menaced by bullets. They want to have their say. And they took taken time out from work. These are working people. So Lisa Rose was quite adamant. She would not change her mind. So I began giving actually speeches from the floor. This was before the actual meeting began. I kind of gave a little pep talk, somewhat sarcastic pep talk about how the board was violating the will of the community, and was going to ignore the fact that a lot of people needed to have the time they expected and weren't going to get it. So she eventually did change her position and allowed us each to have 5 minutes. There was very sparse attendance at the board, and again, the background of this whole thing was kind of the phony issue in the Sentinel, which was, the police department is fighting with the Citizens Police Review Board about these complaints, that these complaints should be allowed to be seen by the Police Review Board. The Police Review Board was not actually seeking any real oversight by which they could have done called, for example, for an early investigation, which they didn't. All they wanted was to sort of make the legal point that they should be somehow consulted before the complaints, or at least informed that the police police chief was throwing the complaints into the wastebasket. So they could say, well, okay. And maybe they could say, well, maybe we'll want to take a look at this complaint before it gets thrown away. So here you hear the oral communications period of the Citizens Police Review Board. You'll hear a couple people speaking. The first speaker is Doug McGrath, who is one of the original complainants on the board, I should say, before the board. He was a fellow who, actually, he has relatives on the police force, not local police force, but he's, I think, from Austin, Texas. He had relatives who were police. He's actually pro-police in many ways, but he was somewhat upset with how the police department treated the Brian Andrus shooting, and we're now going to hear what he had to say at the Citizens Police Review Board on April 13th.
I'm Doug McGrath. My partner and I presented a couple of complaints, and Sergeant Belcher didn't really find that they were specific enough. I remembered them. And basically what I'd like to say is that we cannot have a police force afraid of possible reviews into police shoots. We need a professional police force prepared to stand up to public scrutiny in every single weapons discharge and a public crowd of their professional police force. The addendums to the first one was no exigent circumstances. And that is here, I got this out of the law definition of that. It wasn't met for Garcia's entering the apartment he entered through illegal. That's the more specific. There was no grounds to enter the apartment number two. Officer Garcia combatively and compromisingly entered Andrus' apartment illegally. Number three, following unknown procedures, the police officer Garcia entered apartment investigating a problem with subject known and or on record of serious questions himself of proper police behavior. Officer's conduct directly created problem. Number four, excessive force charged against officers Zimnick, Berry, and Hennig, firing 9 shots at or into prone, defenseless, unarmed Brian Andrus. First shot, not Andrus down. Later, hit or misses were fired at Andrus on face, on ground. Testimony of eyewitnesses. I'm not going to name them. Those are, one of them is on affidavit. He's a juvenile. Officers seem to be involved in false evidence, number five, or false statements. Eyewitnesses' testimony from all eyewitnesses stated Andrus hit no one, swung once, or never saw a bat. Eyewitnesses on affidavit show, saw the whole thing. They had balcony seats. Children, a lot of them. Stated Andrus never hit a single officer. I have a public hearing requested on that. The City of Police Chief Stephen Belcher pointed out a law that I had to look up. I have that here with Penal Code and all the latest on it, that it addresses discovery. And his personal request to me to be more concise places me in position to request discovery privileges. I show the police chief's request to me for more specifics to be a showing of materiality. Sauter versus the City of Concord, that is on the law right here that he had me look up himself. I waited my time, the rest of my time.
And that was Doug McGrath bringing his amended complaint to the Citizens Police Review Board, which he did with the assistance of Citizens Police Review Board staff member Gary Yamani. Not a bad thing. The complaint becomes more specific and so forth. But again, the complaint was delayed for 3 weeks by the police chief under these strange circumstances. And again, I suggest to you one motivation for this might be that the police chief did not want to reveal the police reports at that time. The second point about this is that McGrath, in giving the complaint back to the police chief, presents the appearance that the police review board is somehow here standing up for him and saying, oh, well, the police department has to consider your complaint. That's true. But what's really happening is not that they really want to consider the complaint, because if they did, they would hold an early investigation themselves. Instead, they are throwing it back into the same mechanism that essentially is the death of any real complaints. The internal affairs process of the police department unaugmented by real independent oversight, which the Citizens Police Review Board can provide. In this case, it's particularly nasty because there is an existing court action going on. Brian Andrus is being charged with multiple felonies, and the police department is likely to hold that complaint for months until the entire case is resolved. So if the CPRB wants to do anything, if the Citizens Police Review Board wants to do anything, they have to take independent action, which they could have done even before this meeting or at this meeting, and which they didn't do. Instead, they are making a pretense of action. What they are doing is they're engaging in a kind of a procedural correctness. That's all they're doing. The substance of what's going on, a real investigation into the Andrus shooting, really keeping those officers off the streets, they're all back on duty except, I guess, for Zamenik, pending a real investigation, all that is put aside. Real concerns about the safety of children, firearms policies, not being investigated, not being dealt with. Instead, they're kind of spinning their wheels around the issue of, well, we'll make sure the complaint is correctly specified and sent back to the police. It's all a very kind of legalistic process that has little to do with the substance of justice and the substance of the community concerns of the people who are making the complaints. Let's continue with the oral communications period, and here's some more of what other speakers had to say.
Thank you very much. Now, I think your comments actually will be put later into the agenda items. Yeah. If you're not quite sure, let us know. We'll try to figure it out. So we're open up to oral communications on items that are not further on the agenda.
And that, of course, is Lisa Rose, the chair of the board. And what she's telling you is that they want to kind of peg all the comments into little slots where they can put them aside and fundamentally ignore them. Do I sound too cynical and sarcastic? Well, you're listening to them to a man who's spoken to them for, dozens of hours and seen not just his complaints ignored, but the complaints of the people who actually got this board started, like Margaret Marr, essentially ignored. So what's happening here is a process of simply putting everything in proper legal order and then leaving it to the police department.
Anyone else would like to?
Yeah, sure. My name is Rick Peterson. I was citing some cases today at work over some past cases, and this has a striking resemblance to the Rodney King case. You know, it's the first case that crossed my mind that reminded me of this. It was horrible. I lived right across the street from this whole situation. There was maybe 15 to 20 children playing right around the vicinity when this happened. The police, when they opened fire, apparently had no regard for the public safety. And I think they should be thinking about the public before anybody. For themselves, before the victim, they should be thinking about the public. And all of us felt in great danger on a bright Sunday afternoon. You know, so if there's a problem with the police and Mr. Andrus, that's their problem. What gives them the right to open fire? Let my 8-year-old son witness this. Okay, he's devastated. Do any of you help? Where do I get help for my 8-year-old son? Why are we left with all the bad stuff? The police, they get to pack up and leave and go home to their wife and children, get their paycheck. We're left in the neighborhood helpless. Many, many children need a lot of help now. And I've asked the police, where do I go to take these children? Got no response. I think it's very unfortunate that the police allow children to witness this kind of behavior. I think it's very pathetic that they allow my 8-year-old son to see a man get shot down. Would you like your children to see this? I don't think so. So why am I stuck paying for this whole situation? Why me? My son has completely changed his life. He doesn't sleep good. He has a total disrespect of the police now. He doesn't understand why Brian got shot down. And I think it's very unfortunate of what happened. I think the police acted, they were very selfish on what they did. very selfish. They had no right to let the public see this kind of behavior. Absolutely no right. So we'll file a formal complaint. And I just wish that, you know, where there was absolutely no forethought of the public safety. None at all. None at all. Why did they have to act so selfish? Why couldn't they detain him? Why couldn't they back off? There was four policemen against one man. Four policemen can't handle one individual without having to fire 10 shots at him? That's pathetic. And then to let children witness this whole behavior. That's pathetic.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next speaker.
My name is Nicholas Whitehead. Been a long time monitor of police methods and actions. I conduct my own interviews and study as many reports as possible. I want to pick up the theme of the last speaker and compare the recent action in Watsonville in the month of March when they had